Well, let's talk a little carbon here, because you have a new governor that just took office today, actually,
right,
or yesterday. And as he comes from the Republican side of the aisle, the EPA just announced is a facility or a, kind of a super judiciary, because you can approve your own rules internally.
Well,
have you had
called,
time to
yeah the primacy rule. We got designated.
Explain that a little bit.
Basically, what that means is we get to permit our own carbon capture sequestration wells. So we get to decide that on our own. We don't have to go through the EPA. That's a big, huge step for us, by the way.
North Dakota has that. We used to just call that we had kind of a approval on that. We called it like a super EPA clause type thing, where they could approve their own carbon deals, because North Dakota was the only state for a long time, or they were one of two, I think.
Yeah, South Dakota and Wyoming are the two, two other states that have it. So this was a huge step for us, and it's of course a very big deal down here.
Of course, Dr. Lauren Scott, you do the economic outlook for the state, a bit with economics, and you interject the energy economy, of course. So what kind of impact does this have for your state from an economic standpoint?
Are you talking about the primacy issue?
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be quite significant, because if you read the latest Louisiana economic forecast, what you will find is, if you look at just three areas in our state, the Baton Rouge area, the New Orleans area, and the Lake Charles area, we have $34 billion worth of projects underway being constructed right now. We have another $120 billion in projects that have announced but have not issued a final investment decision, what's called an FID yet. And if you kind of look across those, they are heavily involved in producing either clean something or blue something, clean ammonia, clean methanol, clean whatever. And that clean adjective actually has a meaning. It actually means that they are going to capture their carbon and then sequester it someplace. If you want to be blue, you want to be blue hydrogen, for example, you not only capture your carbon and sequester it, but also the electricity that you're using comes from a renewable resource, either from wind, solar, or burning of wood chips, something like that. Our bagasse down here where we make sugar cane, we have bagasse left over. We can burn that to generate electricity. So the whole idea of carbon capture and sequestration, it's huge down here. It's a lot. Many of these firms that have announced are of course getting huge subsidies from the federal government to do this. It almost totally pays for the process. And so many of them are in the process of working all this out, getting all the necessary permits. And in our particular case, convincing people, the general public, that sequestering CO2 in their area is okay. And that's, in some cases, for some of these projects, that's a non-trivial issue.
How are you transporting it down there in the Midwest here? A couple are pipelines. Another one is on site, for example. Wyoming, another happening down there. Do you have the geography to do it in Louisiana, or do you have to transport it out? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, we definitely have the geography. We have a lot of very deep well sites because, of course, this whole state has been explored and oil and natural gas have been lifted up. So we have a lot of well sites to begin with that are available for pumping the CO2 down there. Secondly, we have a lot of salt domes in Louisiana, and a lot of these salt domes can be hollowed out, make the brine out of that. The brine, by the way, that you take out of a salt dome as you dissolve the inside of it, is quite often used in the chemical manufacturing sector. And then you have a number of these hollowed out salt domes down here that can be used for storing CO2. And then importantly, there are not a lot of pipelines in the United States that are technically able to carry CO2, but there is one of them does exist here, and it runs from the Houston area right across the southern part of Louisiana and then up into the middle part of Mississippi. It's called the Denbury Pipeline. Denbury was just purchased by ExxonMobil primarily for this very reason. They saw this big market developing here for carbon sequester and storage, and so they bought this pipeline. And this what was happening is Denbury had been collecting CO2 from all these facilities along that pipeline's range, bringing it up to a dome, the Jackson Dome in Mississippi, and storing it there. Then they were taking it out to use it for enhanced oil recovery. They were taking that CO2 and pumping it back down into old wells, which would then generate even more oil coming out of those old wells. So now we have that pipeline here. We have a lot of geology available for sequestering it. The question then becomes, A, are you going to be able to convince the public that this is okay? B, there are other pipelines going to have to be built to move this product from the site where it's produced to where it's going to be sequestered. And sometimes, permitting to that gets to be a dicey thing. So it's not real easy. It's not real straightforward. But Louisiana and Texas are really ideal places for this to take place.
You mentioned Denbury. We have a similar up here in North Dakota, South Dakota, with the CO2. Since I want to say from the 80s, they were doing some carbon work. So very, very rich history with understanding a lot of the carbon market and et cetera. You mentioned enhanced oil recovery, and that is another market that exists. Carbon industry will. I'm under the impression some of the tax credits has they have a time limit on. You can't use it for anything else. It has to stay in the ground. And I've seen where in California they've made either pledges or part of their carbon sequestration says they will not have enhanced oil recovery involved, that sort of thing. Do you know anything about that side of it, whether it can be used for it, or if there's any sort of regulations against using any of the carbon sequestration for enhanced oil recovery?
Certainly not down here. And as it turns out, Denbury is using it for their own wells that they've drilled. And they have wells really going from Houston area across the state of Louisiana and on up into the middle part of Mississippi. So apparently it's not an issue in this particular geographic region.
Okay, we have it up specifically with the ethanol carbon and something to do with some storage. And anyway, that's a whole different
Yeah,
bill. So.
most of the new ones, like for example, Air Products is wanting to build a huge new hydrogen plant. I think it's hydrogen or methanol plant, just below where I live in Ascension Parish, and they want to move the carbon that they're going to capture across a ways up by via pipeline to a place called Lake Maurepas, and then they're going to go about, oh, I can't remember exactly how far, but very, very deep below Lake Maurepas. And there's some, the proper class of wells there, proper class of formations there for them to store it. Now, their difficulty here is that the people that use the lake are worried about that. They don't know very much about sequestration. They don't know that it's been around for a very long time, that it's a proven technology, that this stuff is way, way, way below the bottom of the lake and is no threat to the lake at all. And so what they're doing is they're drilling some test wells there and showing the people how it works. But they got a bit of a hill to climb there in terms of convincing the general public that this is a this is not going to be harmful to the lake. So this is an issue that's come up. Now, at the other end, up in the Alexandria area, which is in the central part of the state, an outfit called CLECO. CLECO is a power company, and they provide electricity to the central part of the state and to what we call the North Shore, the north across Lake Pontchartrain from New Orleans. And they have a very large power plant just north of Alexandria there that is run off of pet coke and coal. And because of that, it's relatively dirty. What it emits is relatively dirty. Now, what they're going to do, they have a proposal now. They're going through all the steps, all the processes, all the funding, et cetera, to capture their carbon, but they are going to dispose of it on a in a well that's on their site. So they're not going to have the pipeline issues that you may see down in the southern part of the state. And I don't think, because it's not going under a lake, you're not going to have probably as much public pushback as you get in other cases. But that's probably more the outlier than the norm down here. Most of these are chemical plants, refineries, proposed refineries, companies that are going to make jet fuel out of animal fats or wood waste, all kinds of stuff like that. And finding in most cases, they're going to have to transport it and then sequester it someplace away from their site. And that's going to present them some issues. And that's why this primacy thing was so important for us to get here in the state instead of having it done at the EPA.
Who's gravitating to your carbon industry in Louisiana? The reason I ask is up in North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, it's primarily the coal and, even oil and gas, and starting to see ethanol get gravitate towards it all the way from Iowa to Nebraska, Illinois, sort of thing. What type of industries are you seeing gravitate to this carbon
Well,
market down there?
I guess because of just the nature of the Louisiana economy, there's three main ones. One is the refining sector, the refining companies like Marathon and ExxonMobil, Shell, and others. They're moving towards using this to capture their carbon that they emit, and then a huge part is the whole chemical industry down here. We have a very, very large chemical industry in Louisiana. I think we're about the third largest producer of chemicals, maybe in the United States. I'm pretty sure that's where we rank now, third or fourth. And they are making bulk chemicals, primarily the first stage chemicals. And those first stage chemicals are the ones that typically have the largest CO2 emissions. So they are looking at it. And then, of course, the third one is a new group. And of course, that's the LNG exporters. The LNG exporters, part of the process of taking raw natural gas and liquefying it, taking it, freezing it, bringing it down to 1/600th of its volume, so you can put it on a ship and move it to Asia or to Europe to regasify. That process does involve the creation of CO2, and so that's a third group that's heavily involved in this and wants to capture much of theirs and then sequester it someplace.
Anything happening at the university level? Any research projects, private partner projects, partnerships, that sort of thing happening?
I know less about that, except that one of my good friends, a guy by the name of Greg Upton, now heads up the we have a Center for Energy Studies here at LSU. And I know that Greg was pretty heavily involved in the work to try to get one of the hydrogen hubs in our state. And he does a lot of work in this whole area about carbon capture and sequestration, and would be a good guy if you folks to talk to about some of the technical stuff that's going on, because his unit is one of the primary ones that's doing research in this area.
We have a couple of people from the carbon market on. It's interesting because they came from the oil and gas industry, and they transitioned into the carbon market. And we've talked to people who've transitioned into the wind industry, and those were like deep sea welders, for example.
Right.
And so lately, few that comment was interesting, and they didn't mean it to be a political. They meant it to be more observational. And what they said was that the government is the one stimulating this entire carbon market. And I found that interesting, you know, because with the 45Q credits, and I think they've even increased on some levels in some areas too. And you've got, you know, economic projects and, you know, this kind of a grant here for this type of a thing. You know, you're an economist. How do you wrap your head around something like that?
Well, I mean, from an economic standpoint, there is this notion in economic, a very important notion in economics, called externalities. If you're a very conservative economist like I am, you want the government to be very limited in what it does, provide systems of justice, provide for national defense. But there's also an area where we really need the government to be involved in regulation. And that's when there are negative externalities. And that is when, for example, if left to their own, just profit-making companies would have a tendency to not care about the carbon they're emitting or anything they're emitting for that matter. And we know, because this is harmful to health, that that you do need to regulate. You need to do something to make people bear the cost of these negative externalities that they're creating. And so I think one would make an argument that what they are doing right now with these credits that you mentioned earlier is designed to get these companies to reduce these negative externalities they're creating with the pumping out of the CO2 into the air. So I think there's a place for that. I think what you have to worry about here is that it's very costly for the government to do that. And I don't think our federal government right now is in a position to be continually running up its national debt, the national debt. I think one of the reasons we're having the inflation rates we're having right now is because spending is pretty much out of control. Plus, I know that people say they want clean air, but you really don't want clean air, because there comes a point where the benefits from reducing pollution are not worth the cost. Okay. Some level of pollution is not that harmful to people's health. Some level of CO2 being pumped out is not all that harmful to people's health. As a matter of fact, people ought to keep in the background of their heads this idea that CO2 is food for plants. As a matter of fact, one of the things you will find in the last few years is, as the CO2 emissions have increased worldwide, so has the greening of the planet. The planet is actually green. It is able to grow more, because that's actually food for plants. There is a level of regulation that makes sense, but you should be doing benefit cost analysis on any new regulation coming along, because at some point it costs too much to have, you're giving up too much in jobs and earnings and well-being for your people in return for microscopic improvements in health. That's a lot of babbling there, but there's a role for government to play. But what you don't want to do is just overdo it.
So in a nutshell, what should somebody take away from, you know, the recent announcement that, you know, Louisiana what's the official term again that the EPA awarded you?
Primacy.
Right. And so it's going to expedite quite a bit of approval. It's going to become very advantageous in the carbon marketplace, if you will. I mean, there's a lot of companies in California that have gotten a lot of dollars to invest in this market for years by now, and other places as well. Is this the type of market where companies from other places can come and try their innovations, or more of big research projects that is going to fuel this type of news, if you will?
Well, I would think that especially South Louisiana and especially Southeast Texas are just prime places to do that. The primary, I mentioned some numbers at the start of this conversation here that we had $120 billion in projects that have been announced but have not issued an FID. We have another $33, $34 billion in projects that are underway. I mean, for the state of Louisiana, that's a huge, those are huge numbers. If you went back pre-2012, if we had 1 billion in an entire year across the entire state, we would have thought that was great. We have over 150, almost 160 billion right now announced underway and potentially going to happen. And so these are absolutely huge. A huge change. The primary reason for this huge change, and the reason it's coming to South Louisiana and Southeast Texas, is because the main input to most of these companies, the main thing that they're using as a raw material is natural gas. They're using natural gas for LNG. They're using natural gas. They make chemicals out of natural gas. Natural gas is the key, and the price of natural gas in the United States is very low compared to the price of natural gas in Asia and in Europe. Okay, it might be $3 per million BTU here, it might be 20 there. Their chemical firms in those other countries can't possibly compete in the world market, okay, for chemicals when they're having to pay $20 for their input, and they're paying three here. So what is happening is that firms are coming like crazy to this particular geographic area because A, there is a lot of natural gas here. There is a huge network of pipelines to get it to you down here. B, there is a waterway, the Mississippi River, the Calcasieu Ship Channel, the Houston Ship Channel, where deep draft ships can come and pick up your product and move it to the world markets. There are Again, the brine that you might need. We have the salt domes here and in Texas to meet that. This is just an ideal place, and that's one of the reasons you're seeing this huge boom in this particular geographic area. And because of that, well, I mean, this is if you wanted to do more research, you wanted to invest, you wanted to look at the carbon market, this is where it's the hottest, probably in the entire country.
What do you make of the carbon market, if you will, whether it be from the sequestration or whether it be from the pipeline or whether it be from, the on-site type of a area? I see it as being a pretty diverse industry from, software to automation to engineering to even oil and gas. I mean, it seems like they're investing really into this. And where are
Yeah,
you seeing this
I think
industry going?
that's the I think that's the case. I just don't think you should look to this as a major job producer or a major income
Okay.
producer, because once your CCS project is operational, once you've got your pipeline in place, and once you've got your well in place or your salt dome in place, I mean, there's not many jobs associated with running one of these suckers. I mean, you could probably run the whole pipeline and well operation with 10 people. Okay. It doesn't, whereas a chemical plant is going to have 600 people, very high wage people, by the way, running it. So it'll be nice in terms of reducing CO2 in the air. That's what you want. It'll be nice in terms of when you're building the pipeline, when you're building the well, there's going to be some jobs associated with that. But once the capital expenditures are out of the way, don't expect a bunch of jobs. There just will not be a bunch of jobs associated with this.
I said or I brought up the metaphor or analogy or similarity, whatever it might be called, that this really has the energy right now of a gold rush, but it really seems the calm boom at the end. And is that, you know, there's a lot of investment to get to the credits or whatever. That once that money's gone, you know, what are you looking at? You're looking at 10 jobs, six,
I mean,
kind of thing. So that's the bust. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, and I don't, you know, you're going to have some offshoots and you're going to have an economy that'll be created from this, but it's not going to be.
It's not going to be like getting a chemical plant or refinery,
yeah,
or any kind of car manufacturing plant or anything like that. So don't expect that. You're gonna have some initial nice bumps in terms of the pipeline, the well development, but after that, the operational side is quite small.
Well, what's the takeaway then? You have a new administration coming in, I remember. I had one more question for you, and that was a technical question. But up in our area, the carbon pipeline, has become a political issue, and there's a lot of people that believe the state of North Dakota, of Iowa, the state of South Dakota, and parts of Nebraska are going to actually be down to one single issue, and that has to do with the carbon pipeline because it represents so many different things. And so do you see the carbon industry being political this year's election at all? Being political, being used as a major part of the platform. I know Vivek Ramaswamy, he believes the carbon pipeline is going to be a big political issue this year, but he's, you know, kind of a fringe candidate that gets middle of the road numbers. So I'm not sure, you know, if his opinions count or not, but are you seeing it being political at all?
Only at the local level.
Okay.
Again, I mentioned that Lake Maurepas. There's one parish called to my east where I live right here called Livingston Parish. It's become quite a political issue in that parish. At the state level, I think the general acceptance of this technology, and that it's not new, it's old technology. We know how it works. We know it's safe. We know the pipelines are safe. This is, you know, people should not get excited about this, but there it's in some cases at the local level, you're going to have some issues. Okay. And always, and it doesn't matter where you are, what I call the extreme greens, they're against everything. I mean, even though this is something that's going to help from a green standpoint, they're going to figure out some way of being against it. As it turns out, politically, at least in Louisiana, for the most part, they're very, very vocal, and it kind of depends on the parish, but they're very vocal, but they don't really have a great deal of power. And so we'll just kind of see how all that plays out.
And then the takeaway, what was the takeaway you thought people should kind of extract from kind of the carbon industry and how the state is becoming
primacy?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. What's the main takeaway for people on this?
Well, I think the main takeaway is that, especially for us down here, I mentioned that there are $120 billion in projects that have announced but have not pulled the trigger. I think now with the primacy issue, the probability of pulling that trigger is much higher than it was before. Because I think now these firms, you know, this is the final investment decision is basically a matter of math, working out the rate of return on your investment. And If you're going to be able to go to the Louisiana Department of Environmental Quality, and you're not going to have a bunch of people who are focused on stopping anything involving chemicals, and that's the case at the EPA, National EPA, they're populated by a large number of people who have kind of the Biden idea, Biden framework, Biden thinking towards anything fossil fuels. They were thinking it's going to be hard to do this final investment decision. I think they're now going to find that it's difficult, but it's a lot easier than it was going to be. And so for us down here, the main benefit to us of the primacy issue is we're going to get a whole lot more of those firms pulling the trigger. And those firms are firms that hire very high skill, very high wage people with very large positive multiplier effects on other sectors of the economy. So I think we're looking at something very, very positive for us down here.
This seems like, and one final question, positive oil and gas industry because enhanced oil recovery is an option down there.
I don't think CO2, with exception of the wells that Denbury has in this area, I don't think CO2 has been used that much down here for enhanced oil recovery. I may be wrong on that, but I don't think so. Mainly down here, they use water for their enhanced oil recovery. I don't think they use CO2, and they use chemicals to some extent, but I don't think they use CO2 very much.
The Crude Life would like to welcome and invite each and every one of you to the Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, Nevada, February 7th and 8th, 2024. Oil, gas, wind, solar, uranium, Bitcoin, sustainable solutions, and much, much more at this year's Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, February 7th and 8th. Folks, you don't want to miss the Crude Life Podcast Pool Party happening February 7th. It's the week before the Super Bowl, folks. The Energy Exposition. The Crude Life is all in 2024. For more information, check out energyexposition.com.